praise you. In your awesome name, amen.
So I don't know about you, but if you are following along in the readings, it has been exciting, has it not? I love Genesis. I love it. I love all of these Sunday school stories that you don't actually get the full story when you're in Sunday school, because if you did, it would be a little bit scandalous, right? So we kind of tone it down a little bit for kids. But reading these stories is just so exciting. And Genesis is one of those books that can read like a novel where you just can't put it down. I have an addiction to reading novels. I should probably be a little bit more addicted to reading other things. But I do have an addiction to reading novels. And if I get a good book, I will be awake until the birds chirp to finish the book. And there has been more than one occasion where I have read an entire book within a night because I just can't put it down. It just captivates your imagination, and it's just so exciting. Well, that's Genesis. Genesis is just so exciting. And if I won't make you raise your hands. If you like watching soap operas, they have nothing on what the Bible has. They really don't. And so if you haven't read it, read it. But what we're going to do today is something slightly different, because there are just so many good stories, I couldn't pick one. So we're going to have a fly-through overview of the chapters that we're in this week's reading, which are only a small portion of the story. And it's going to really focus on Jacob and one of his sons, Joseph. The last couple weeks, we've looked at Abraham. We've looked at the promises that were given to Abraham, the blessings that were given to Abraham. We've looked at the mistakes that Abraham made, and yet the blessings that still came. We looked at Isaac and his son. Isaac also made mistakes, and yet the blessings continued. And so we're going to pick up this story with Jacob, one of Isaac's two sons who were twins. And they fought in the womb, and they fought their entire lives. And when they came out, Jacob was the favored son of Rebekah, who was Isaac's wife. Isaac's favored son was Esau, who was the oldest. Now, birthright order doesn't mean a whole lot to us here in the Western world, but birthright order is very significant in the Middle Eastern culture. And so, Esau was the one who was to get everything. He was the oldest, and so he naturally was going to be the inheritor of the estate. Rebekah liked Jacob, the younger twin. She encourages Jacob to finagle and to change the way that things were supposed to happen. And so throughout a number of events that we're not going to go into details of everything, because it would take us much more than what time we have this morning, Rebekah convinces Jacob to steal the birthright from his brother. Isaac is getting old in his age. When the blessing comes, Isaac can't see, he's blinded. Jacob puts on, his brother was hairy, he puts on some skin of a goat, and he goes in, and then he steals the blessing of his brother. So now he's got the birthright, now he's got the blessing. Esau is not a happy brother. And Isaac has given these things to his younger son. As you can imagine, it didn't go well between Esau and Jacob. And Rebekah says, you need to leave, and you need to go and find a wife, because we don't want you to marry a foreigner in the land that we're living. So you need to go. But before you go, Isaac is going to bless you. So Isaac blesses him, and Jacob heads off to find his cousins, and he goes to find a wife. And in Genesis chapter 8 is where we pick up this week's reading. And it starts with Jacob's dream on his way to go find his wife. And Genesis chapter 28, starting in verse 10. Meanwhile, Jacob left Beersheba and traveled towards Haran. At sundown, he arrived at a good place to set up camp and stopped there for the night. Jacob found a stone to rest his head against and lay down to sleep. And as he slept, he dreamed of a stairway reaching from the earth up to heaven. And he saw the angels of God going up and down the stairway. At the top of the stairway stood the Lord. And he said, I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham and the God of your father Isaac. The ground you are lying on belongs to you. I am giving it to you and to your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. They will spread out in all directions, to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. And all the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. What's more, I am with you, and I will protect you wherever you go. One day I will bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you. Then Jacob woke from his sleep, and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't even aware of it. But he was also afraid, and he said, what an awesome place this is. It is none other than the house of God, the very gateway to heaven. The next morning, Jacob got up very early, and he took a stone that he had rested his head against, and he set it upright as a memorial pillar. Then he poured olive oil over it, and he named that place Bethel, which means the house of God. Jacob, who'd stolen his birthright, stolen the blessing, deceived his father, is blessed by God and given the inheritance of Abraham and Isaac to be the chosen nation through whom everything, the world, would be blessed. So Jacob goes on his way. Now, if you were at family camp last year, Dr. Busick, who is one of our general superintendents, gave some fantastic sermons on Rachel and Leah. And this is a part of this story, and I'm not going to repeat them all because he had such a narrative way of telling these women's stories, and it was fantastic. I do encourage you to try to find them. We will try to find them, and then we can post a link to them because I know they videoed them and they are available to watch. But they were incredible. But Jacob arrives where his father's cousin is in the land, in Laban's land, and he sees Rachel, who is his cousin. And he's prayed before this, God, just show me the woman. Show me who I'm supposed to marry. And so he's there, and the shepherds come in, and Rachel is one of these shepherds, and she's bringing the flocks to water the flocks. And Jacob is just like smitten with Rachel, absolutely smitten. And he starts crying, and it's absolutely ridiculous because it's just like craziness. But he's there, and so he goes back, and it turns out it's the right family that he's looking for. And he says to his uncle Laban, let me work for you so that I can marry your younger daughter, Rachel. And Laban goes, okay, great. I've got slave for 7 years. Fantastic. You know, if that's the payment, that's fine. So for 7 years, Jacob works for his uncle Laban. And the night of the wedding comes. His time spent is done. And so they have a wedding feast and a wedding banquet, and there's a little bit too much wine going around, and Jacob goes in to marry his wife, Rachel, and wakes up in the morning, and it is her ugly sister, Leah. And he is appalled. He can't believe it. What have you done, Uncle Laban? Why on earth have you tricked me into this? He's horrified. And Laban's response is, well, I have to marry my older daughter before I marry my younger one, but you can work another 7 years, and I'll give you Rachel. Well, Jacob really wants Rachel. He doesn't really want Leah. He wants Rachel. And so he agrees to this insanity of working another 7 years to marry Leah's sister. Family dynamics here, people. Never a good idea to marry sisters and think that things are going to go okay. Well, Jacob doesn't have to wait the 7 years to actually get Rachel. 1 week after he marries Leah, he gets to marry Rachel. So again, that's a quick honeymoon that ends badly with the marriage of your sister coming into this equation. And Jacob is enslaved another 7 years to work for Laban, to work off the debt of having Rachel become his wife. Now, Rachel and Leah have their own story. Leah begins having children straight away. She has 4 sons. And every time within her story, when one of the sons is born, she is hoping and praying to God that Jacob will love her. But every time it doesn't happen. But on her 4th son, Judah, she finally finds her worth in God and not in her husband. She feels complete. Rachel, on the other hand, is incredibly jealous because she's not able to have children, which is very important in this way of being a family. Leah has 4 sons. Rachel has none. They throw their servants into the mix. All right, Jacob, you have my servant because then she can produce me an heir. It works. Leah throws her servant in the mix. Okay, I need more heirs because now Rachel has heirs through her servant. So Leah's servant has some heirs for her. Eventually, Rachel finally has a son and is named Joseph. Jacob has always loved Rachel the most. In the end of the whole thing of it, they have 12 sons via 4 women. And Jacob, that is his legacy, is these 12 sons. And there were some daughters in there as well. But his favorite is Joseph and Benjamin, who are Rachel's sons. In all of this, he is still working for his uncle Laban. And he finally gets up the determination to ask to leave, to go back to the land of his father Isaac, to go back to the land that God has promised him ultimately, to leave this embondment that he has in order to be a free man with his family. And Laban agrees, but he keeps changing the things that he has to do in order to leave. And so Jacob says, look, I've made you a very wealthy man in the time that I've spent working for you. I've given you all of that I've had, and I've just made you really wealthy. Your flocks have increased. Everything has increased. So what am I supposed to do from this? All of the work that I've given to you, am I supposed to walk away with nothing? And Laban agrees, okay, well, no. What you can have is you can have the lambs who have all the spots on them. Or then the speckles, or the black ones. And Laban keeps changing what he's going to give to Jacob. But God continues to bless Jacob. And so every time that Laban changes his mind on what Jacob gets to take with him as his payment for working all of these years, God increases the numbers of those flocks and actually makes Laban's flocks less. Well, this doesn't go well with Laban's sons. Because, of course, Jacob's acquiring all this wealth and their inheritance is becoming weak, fledgling flocks that aren't doing so hot. So they begin to grumble, and who wouldn't really, right? Like it's bound to be. So Genesis 31, we read this story of taking on the count of Laban and his sons. But Jacob soon learned that Laban's sons were grumbling about him as, Jacob has robbed our father of everything, they said, and he has gained all of his wealth at our father's expense. And Jacob began to notice a change in Laban's attitude toward him. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your father and your grandfather and to your relatives there, and I will be with you. So Jacob called Rachel and Leah out to the field where he was watching his flock, and he said to them, I have noticed that your father's attitude has changed toward me. But the God of my father has been with me. And you know how hard I have worked for your father, but he has cheated me, changing my wages 10 times, but God has not allowed him to do me any harm. For if he said, the speckled animals be your wages, the whole flock began to produce speckled young. And when he changed his mind and he said, the striped animals will be your wages, then the whole flock produced striped animals. In this way, God has taken your father's animals and given them to me. Rachel and Leah responded to Jacob's response or request. That is fine with us. We won't inherit any of our father's wealth anyway. He has reduced our rights to those of foreign women. And after he sold us, he wasted the money you paid him for us. All the wealth God has given you from our father legally belongs to us and our children. So go ahead and do whatever God has told you to do. So they plan to leave. But Jacob is afraid of his uncle Laban. And so they flee. They gather up their things when Laban is away, and they run away, all of them. And it wasn't just an easy run, because there's a lot of people here who are involved in this. But they take all their flocks, they take all their things, and they go. They go quickly. Rachel steals some of her dad's idols and brings them with him. Well, Laban gets back from his trip and is angry that his son-in-law has now stolen his wives and his grandchildren and just run away. But God says to Laban in a dream, leave Jacob alone. So Laban puts on a sad face and he follows Jacob and he says, why did you run away from me? I would have thrown a party for you if you told me that it was time for you to go. And Jacob's honest with him and he says, I was afraid. And as far as I know, I didn't take anything. And so Laban goes and searches because he says, why did you have to steal the things from my house, my idols? And Jacob's going, we didn't steal them, but Rachel knows. And so she sits on them. And this is one of my favorite stories in the Bible, is that she lies to her father by claiming she's on her period. Well, no man's going to ask her to stand up to look underneath her. And so she's sitting in her tent and she says, Dad, I can't get up right now because I'm on my period. So just trust me, I don't have anything. Laban goes on. Jacob says, what did you find that's yours? He found nothing. And so Laban has to go away absolutely devastated because he doesn't have his idols. His daughters are now gone. His flocks, all the good flocks have gone with his son-in-law, and they go. But before they go, they make a treaty. And they make a pact with each other, and they say, this is what's going to happen. From now on, I'm never going to cross this line to go and to hurt you, and you're never going to cross this line. You go and live, and I'll go and live, and we'll live in mutual respect of each other. We'll have a truce, and they parted ways. Jacob should be happy. He's headed back to the land of his father, the land that God has promised him, but he's not. He's fearful because his brother Esau is still on the scene. Remember that guy that he stole everything from? He's still there. So now Jacob doesn't have a fear of his uncle Laban. He has a fear of his brother Esau. And so he begins to send gifts ahead of their party. Flocks of sheep, herds of cattle. He sends them ahead so that his servants can meet Esau and almost do like a bribe. These are from your brother. All's good. Please don't be angry with him. Take these as a peace offering. So he keeps sending all of these things ahead. When all of the gifts have gone, he then also divides his family up into their family groups so that if Esau attacks one, at least the others can escape. So he's not going to lose everything. He's really afraid of his brother, which he has a right to be. When all of them have gone off on their journeys, Jacob is alone. And one night, God comes down and wrestles with him. And as he's wrestling with him, Jacob has the audacity to demand a blessing from God. God has already blessed him. But he demands a blessing from God as he's wrestling with him. And the Lord touches his hip. He causes him to have a pain. He ends up limping away. But before then, the Lord changes his name to Israel, which means God fights. And Jacob names that place the face of God because he saw the face of God and he lived to survive and tell the story. But he leaves with the limp. He meets Esau. He makes peace with Esau. But the fear is still there. And when Esau turns to go back home, Jacob goes the different way. He doesn't totally trust his brother, and he goes away. More stuff happens between Jacob and some of his daughters and different people. Rebekah and Isaac die. And then we come to his favorite son, Joseph. From his favorite wife, Rachel. And Joseph's story begins to take over in this telling of the story of God. Joseph, who is the favorite, makes a grave mistake. He has a dream in which he is deemed to be the favorite, where all of his brothers come and bow down to him. Now, if you're the favorite, a little hint, don't go bragging about it. Joseph didn't follow that advice. He goes to his brothers and he said, "Hey guys, I've had a dream. And in my dream, all of you bow down and worship me." Doesn't go well. His brothers do not think that this is a good dream. They don't think it's a good idea. And so they decide that they're going to kill him. His eldest brother, Reuben, convinces him, "Guys, we can't kill him. That wouldn't be right." So instead, they throw him into a ditch and leave him for the wild animals. Reuben has a plan to come back. Before he can come back to rescue his brother, Judah decides that he is going to sell him into slavery because they see a caravan coming along. And so into slavery, Joseph goes, and he ends up in Egypt. And he is sold to Potiphar, who is one of Pharaoh's servants, one of Pharaoh's guys in Egypt. And so that is where Joseph ends up. Different line of Judah, another dramatic story with his daughter-in-law Tamar. And it's just fascinating to read all of these things. But in Potiphar's house, Potiphar is married to a woman who is not a very godly woman, as they didn't worship God. And she decides that she really likes Joseph. And so she decides to try to get Joseph to sleep with her. And Joseph has a lot of integrity, and he doesn't. It'd be very easy, but he doesn't. And so Potiphar's wife gets very angry because she's been rejected. And she doesn't like to be rejected. And so she steals Joseph's coat. When Joseph runs out of the house, she then lies to all of her servants, lies to her husband, and then Joseph ends up in jail, completely innocent because of his integrity and his fear of God, that he actually wanted to abide by what he believed. And so Potiphar's wife, they get sent to jail, and for a long time, Joseph is in jail in Egypt. He begins to be able to interpret dreams with God's help. The cupbearer and the baker of Pharaoh's are both in jail with him. And they both have very disturbing dreams to them. And so he interprets the dreams for them, and they come true. One of them is restored to their place of honor, and he promises Joseph that he will remember him to Pharaoh and have him released. The other one is killed, which is what his dream showed. 2 years passes, and it's not until 2 years later where Joseph is sitting in the prison and he has received favor with all of the prison guards because he's a good, innocent guy who worships God. Pharaoh has a dream. He doesn't like it. He dreams that there are these 7 fat cows that come out of the river. They're doing really good, and then 7 skinny cows come out, and he devours them, and they eat the fat cows, but they're still skinny. Then he has a dream about wheat, that these 7 great grains of wheat grow up, and then 7 shriveled ones come and gobble up the whole grains of wheat. Pharaoh is really disturbed by these dreams. He's asking all of his wisdom guys, all of the people who work for him who can interpret dreams, and nobody can interpret this dream. So Pharaoh's like, what am I going to do? I don't know what these mean. I'm not sleeping because it's so scary. I just don't know what's going on. And his cupbearer remembers Joseph. And he says, when I was in jail, there was a guy who interpreted dreams, a Hebrew guy. Maybe he can interpret your dream. So Pharaoh calls him up. Joseph comes up. He interprets the dream. Pharaoh is so impressed with what Joseph has done that he makes him second in command of all of Egypt. The only person who has more control in Egypt is Pharaoh himself. It goes Pharaoh, it goes Joseph. He's well respected. He ultimately saves Egypt because what this dream was of Pharaoh was that famine was coming. 7 good years with bumper crops and then 7 years of nothing. So Joseph stores all of the bumper crops within the 7 years. And when famine hits, Egypt is in plenty because of the wise thinking of Joseph. The famine extends to where Joseph's brothers are back in Canaan. And Jacob, his dad, who is still in mourning at the loss of his son, Joseph, his favorite son. His wife has passed away at this point, Rachel, his favorite wife. He's in mourning, and now they have nothing to eat as a family. He sends the brothers, except for Benjamin, his next favorite son, to Egypt because he heard that there's still food in Egypt. So he sends them. Joseph immediately recognizes his brothers. His brothers have no idea that it's Joseph that they stand in front of. And so Joseph decides to have a little bit of a payback. He decides that he's going to make sure that they know what they did to him was wrong. So he claims and he charges them as spies. They claim their innocence. But he sends them back home with grain and with their money. But he keeps one of the brothers with him. And he says to them, you have to bring me back your other brother. Otherwise, I'm going to be determined that you are spies, and if you show your face again, you're all going to end up in jail. The brothers return back to their father. Their father is devastated. I can't now lose my other son whom I love. He's my life. He's my everything. Can't make the brothers feel very good about themselves. But this is my life. This is my husband. Don't take him away because you're going to just send me to the grave. But they say, I have to. We have to go back. We can't go back until we have our brother with us. And the story carries on, and it keeps going all the way till the end of Genesis. And we're going to stop there because that was this week's reading. But at the end of Genesis, we're going to just skip ahead just slightly to chapter 50. Because in all of that craziness, in all of this stuff that goes on, there's something bigger at work here. Within this whole story of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, even the tangent lines that go off with Judah and Tamar, because that's the line where Christ is going to come from. All of this, there's a bigger story at play. So Joseph's brothers sent a message to Joseph. They're back in Egypt now. Jacob actually travels back with them. Before your father died, he instructed us to say to you, please forgive your brothers for the great wrong they did to you, for their sin in treating you so cruelly. So we, the servants of God, of your father, beg you to forgive our sin. When Joseph received the message, he broke down and wept. Then his brothers came and threw themselves down before Joseph. Look, we are your slaves, they said. But Joseph replied, don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I can punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so that I could save the lives of many people. No, don't be afraid. I will continue to take care of you and your children. So he reassured them by speaking kindly to them. You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. This whole thing is the story of God. The craziness of Abraham the insanity of Isaac, the insane things that happened with Jacob and with Joseph, with his brothers, all of it is an overarching story of God. It's a story of his faithfulness, God's faithfulness. No matter what his chosen people do, God is still faithful to rescue and to bless, because his faithfulness will never change. His people messed up. They made mistakes. They potentially ruined what God's plan were to bless the entire world. But God is still faithful in all of it. And it gives me hope when I read these stories. This is why I love these stories so much, because they're so real. They are so, you could put them into this day and age and they make so much sense. Because they give me hope, because if God can use them, then how can he use me? They messed up big time. I mess up big time. God used Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and he can use me. And when we read these stories in the Old Testament, the crazy things that happen that you just think, oh my goodness, it gives us hope that in God's faithfulness, it doesn't matter how much we mess up. It doesn't matter how worthless we think we are, how weak we think we are. God can still use us, and he chooses to use us to bless and to rescue the world around us. God's people stay in Egypt. The favor of the Hebrew people in Egypt over generations begins to turn because they are increasing. And the Egyptians become fearful that they're actually going to be outnumbered by the Hebrews. And so they make them into slaves. And then we come into the story of Moses calling out God's people and God rescuing his people from slavery. And in Deuteronomy, Moses reminds the people of who they are and the God that they serve. And he says to them in Deuteronomy 7, "Understand therefore that the Lord your God is indeed God. He is the faithful God who keeps his covenant for 1,000 generations and lavishes his unfailing love on those who love him and obey his commands." Moses is saying, don't forget that God is faithful. He is indeed God. And Paul writes to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2, "If we are unfaithful, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny who he is." We serve a God who is faithful. No matter what we do, God is still faithful. And so in our theme of surrender, as we look at this grand story of all the events that happen within the story of God's people in the early days, in the early years, we come away with God's faithfulness. And in our theme of surrender, all I could think of was to let go and let God, to allow him to actually do what he wants to do, to use us in our weaknesses, in our insecurities, in our unworthiness, to accomplish his goals, which is to be faithful and to rescue and bless the world that he created through his people, who are us. And so when we surrender our lives to him and we let go and let him reign, amazing things happen. And people might look at us and go, how on earth is God using you in that? But then they go, but if he's using you, then how much more can he use me? And the hope continues and the hope carries on. When no matter our situations, no matter what's going on, we praise God and we worship him and we allow him to show his faithfulness to us as we are faithful to him. And the song that just kept coming to my mind this week was, "Great is thy faithfulness. O God, my Father, there is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions, they fail not." God didn't say to Jacob, "You have messed up far too many times. I'm done with you and I'm finding somebody else." He still blessed him. He still used him. He still made his name great through this family line that was so messed up. "Thou changest not, thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever will be. Great is thy faithfulness. Great is thy faithfulness. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, thy hand has provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. And I thought this morning we'd finish with singing that. And we can just sing it a cappella. I'll turn my microphone off so you don't have to hear me. But that's the truth of this story, this whole thing. God is faithful to rescue and bless. And he has chosen us as his people to do that within creation. And the crazy stories that we read about that put soap operas to shame show his faithfulness every step of the way. When his people are following him and when his people are not, he remains faithful. He remains truth. He remains God. Let's stand together and sing, Great is thy faithfulness.